As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Springtime is here! Time to bring beans and cheer! Who wants some beans?
Excuse me. I'd like some beans, please.
Oh, a jubilation!
Good morning, Swim World, and welcome to the No Dunks podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Wednesday, May 18th. Here we are back in the Classic Factory. I'm J.E. Skeets, and alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
Dope to be here.
Hey, Tassie. We got our Top Shot Hot Boy, a man who can predict the future, Trey Kirby.
Ayo!
Ayo! Got the international man of mystery taking it to the Max Lee Ellis.
Friends.
Lily, and last, certainly not least, over yonder, super producer, JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live here on YouTube. Hit that like button, subscribe to No Dunks, share the show, and, drop your comments in the stream team right now. Have some fun. Talk to each other. Everybody get along, though, okay? Everybody play nice there in the comments. Email in your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com, or you can tweet them in at nodunksinc. We got a fun one here today because we will talk about the NBA draft lottery, the one that we did predict on yesterday's show. Was that Sebastian or Oscar that drew that little magic logo? Do you know?
Yes, that was a Sebastian special. Yeah.
The boys. The kids special.
The boys watched the video over and over again. I should have been watching the video. They laughed so much when Trey just like smashed his hand. That was the funniest thing they'd ever seen. Just
Great.
And then when I told them, hey guys, you did it. You guys did it. They were like, really? I said, yep, you did it. Well done.
Awesome. So, all right. Well, we'll talk about that and some of the winners and losers in terms of teams moving up, teams moving down, and all that. We're not draft experts, but we can pretend to play one on a podcast. We're going to get into game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. But first, we had a wedgie.
Oh,
what a night. What a day for No Dunks, really. Wedgie number 43 on the season, fourth one in the postseason. One of the best ones we've had in a long time.
Oh, this was nice.
Bam. Just with pinning the Jaylen Brown sort of layup dunk attempt there right into the backboard and the rim. That is one hell of a wedgie, Tass. A little disappointed that Breen didn't drop a bang on a wedgie. I mean, that would have been the perfect time for one, I'm telling you.
He didn't even drop wedgie.
I know.
He's all business, for sure.
Yeah, we've had Mike Breen. I mean, we had a game-winning wedgie, remember, down in the bubble. And it was I think it was Dragic hit a game, or like, you know, the last shot of the game, and it was a wedgie, and he was laughing. So he knows a wedgie.
Of course. He's said it before.
He's wedgie proficient. Yeah. Maybe he was caught up in the moment. Who knows?
It is these finals. Hell of a block wedgie. Number 43, as I said. And we even had the great Twitter account NBA Paint whipping together a little wedgie art. There's Bam.
Yeah.
Giving a little wedgie to tiny little basketball, little Celtics Jaylen Brown basketball there, I guess.
Looks like Shaq with Skeets.
Yeah, a little bit. Very similar. So great stuff in this game, but let's break it down. Jimmy Butler scoring 41, Trey, as the Heat take game one, dominant third quarter, but they beat the Celtics, who were shorthanded, and we can get to that in a second. 118-107.
One of the most
interesting genres of basketball game happened last night. A tale of two halves. Who doesn't love a tale of two halves? Celtics were looking great through the first 24 minutes. Maybe the first 20 minutes, if we want to be honest. But the first half, Boston playing with a ton of intensity. They were doing a really good job limiting the Heat. Three-point shooters, Robert Williams was back in the starting lineup, flying all over the place. He looked awesome, especially in the first half. 12 points he scored, 5 of 5 shooting. He had two blocks, and they were both like top 10 blocks in the NBA this season, the highlight quality. And the Celtics were dominating inside. Also, Jason Tatum totally cooking the Miami Heat in the first half. 21 points, 9 of 14 shooting, 5 assists. People had the Beantown boys in the NBA Finals. Oh. People were giving Jason Tatum Finals MVP after that first half last night. But then they played the second half of Game 1. The Heat are great in the third quarters. They've been the best in the third quarter of any team in any quarter in the playoffs so far this season. And the Celtics have struggled in a bunch of thirds. So Miami went full Richie Beno in the third, Lee. A 22-2 run for Miami. The Celtics didn't make a field goal the first 7 minutes of the third quarter. Completely flipped the script on offense. It was Jimmy Butler. 27 points in the second half, 41 for the game, added 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks. That's pretty close to a 5-by-5 in the playoffs. Incredible. Tons of hard work, tons of being the man. And on defense, it was trapping, basically, that did it for Miami. After Tatum went off in the first half, they switched things up right at the end of the first half, starting putting two on the ball, making him see a lot more bodies anytime he was getting into his dribble package, forcing him to make quick decisions and the right decisions. And Tatum really, really struggled seeing that kind of attention there in the second half. 8 points in the final 24 minutes, 1 of 7 shooting, and 6 turnovers in the second half. Him and Jaylen Brown were a turnover festival, in particular in the third quarter, and it felt like everyone turned into a runout for the Miami Heat. There was a great sequence where Jimmy had back-to-back steals, one for a layup, one for a dunk, a couple of pick sixes there. The Heat had 7 steals, 5 blocks in the third quarter alone. Hadn't really seen Tatum look that flustered yet in the postseason. Got tight again in the fourth quarter, but Jimmy found Max Strus for a couple of run-stopping threes, getting those doodahs looking right. Miami got the win. This was a must-win game, I felt like, and the Heat, you could tell, going into that second half, knowing they had an opportunity with no Marcus Smart, no Al Horford, they took advantage of it and just looked like the number one seed.
Yeah. What a run there in the third quarter. You talked about it when we were doing our previews and predictions for this series. Like, don't be surprised when there's like a 5-6-7 minute window where it looks like you just can't score in the Heat because they lock in, and that's exactly what happened there in the third. And it felt like every possession was a steal, like a pick six, like you called it, going the other way for an easy layup or dunk, or a block. And when you look at the play-by-play, it's like almost was true. Mm-hmm. It was wild to see a team do that to an NBA team. It almost had like a high school feel to it for a second, where it's just like this elite high school coming from the big city, coming into the small town Stratford, just kicking our ass. Like, whoa, we're used to playing St. Mary's.
Yeah.
But my God, you don't see it in the NBA Eastern Finals all that often.
Mary sucks.
Yeah, I killed them. Scored 40 on their ass. Salukis my ass.
Great to get a St. Mary's reference in the Eastern Conference.
Wow, cool. I thought there was only Southern Illinois University. Didn't know there was a second one out there, but St. Mary's always sucks. Yeah, they were the rival for our middle school as well.
A wild third quarter. They won the quarter by 25 points. And so you can win the other three quarters by 8 each and still lose the game.
Right.
And so that was it. Where, yeah, Tatum, a total flip of how they covered him. You know, a lot of credit was being given to P.J. Tucker coming back from that ankle injury, and rightfully so. He was the number one guy on Jason Tatum. They're hitting him a lot earlier in the possession. I thought that they could do that for 6, 7, 8 minutes because they did it to Trae Young. They did it to the Hawks earlier this postseason where they just knew, let's shut this thing down. And in the third quarter, yeah, they came out of the locker room and said, we need to win this game. And they got way up. On Tatum and Brown, like way up at the top. And I thought that it just wouldn't be an issue with the Celtics because they move the ball enough. And I think that's where they missed Marcus Smart a decent amount on that end, but also on the defensive end. Jimmy Butler was picking Peyton Pritchard and Derek White to go at him, either one of those guys, over and over and over again. In the fourth quarter, they ran 7 pick and rolls just at Peyton Pritchard. They picked Pritchard, and they scored 13 points on those. That's kind of the game there when you look at it. I was surprised that Marcus Smart would have played such a big factor. Haralbos Vulgaris with that stat there, but that's where, really, to me, they missed Marcus Smart desperately, and in the third quarter, just to settle things down a little bit, because it was grade school basketball there.
I remember a Greg Popovich game one time where his team just turned the ball over like this, and after the game, it was one of those classic Pop. Turn the ball over, you can't worry about anything else. If you can't take care of the ball, you're not even going to get shots off. You're not going to get your guys into position. And that's the thing is, for me, for the Celtics here, Jimmy Butler, great defensive instincts, but they were easy as well. They were some just sloppy ball handling. Mm-hmm. And again, Jason Tatum has to take a lot of the heat in that third quarter. Careless passes, sloppy passes that the Heat are just ready to pounce on and then immediately go the other end and just get that momentum, get that run. They were up 8 points at halftime here, the Celtics. That was gone in like, felt like 2 or 3 minutes of that third quarter. And the Celtics really didn't have a counter punch after that. I mean, they hit some threes late, but every time they hit a three, the Heat hit a three back the other end.
Yeah.
And I think you saw a really good game there from Gabe Vincent and Max Strus. And I think Gabe Vincent, he's the one who's taking these Kyle Lowry minutes. And when Lowry comes back, assuming he's healthy, he goes into that starting lineup. But Vincent's trying to say to Spoelstra, I want to make this difficult for you, because he is working his ass off on the defensive end as well, which I really, really like. And then when he's being asked to take those shots, he's knocking them in. So this was a very, very impressive second half. Trey, you say it was a tale of two halves, but Ime Udoka said, well, we won three quarters. True. Yes, statistically true, but you lost one by 25. So that doesn't really matter at all when you play like that. But the Celtics certainly did unravel a bit, which we haven't seen a lot of that in the playoffs so far. That third quarter was a complete disaster. That's where they lost the game. And now Horford, who knows if he's out for game two, because he's probably out because it's on Thursday night.
Yeah, it's a quick game two here.
Yeah, Marcus Smart, that's an injury, so we're not sure. But he's been kind of banged up these playoffs.
Who do you think they missed more of the two? If you had to pick, like, well, Pass was talking about Smart or Horford in this one.
Probably Smart, I think, because I thought Robert Williams in there was actually really good.
Yeah.
I mean, this was an incredible defensive game. We had 20 blocks combined. Aaron Nesmith had some incredible blocks out there. He was fantastic. That was all he really did. But yeah, you've got 3 for Butler, 4 for Bam, and then 3 for Gabe Vincent as well. So that's what we kind of expect these two teams, aggressive defensive teams. But I thought Robert Williams was pretty good in his minutes, and it was good to see him back. So interested to see now how they go for game too, because as I say, I think Horford's probably out, but I wouldn't be surprised if Smart sort of fights his way through and gets back in.
Back to Jimmy Butler with the 41-9-5-4-3. He said flirting with the 5x5 there. That stat line has only been accomplished by Anthony Davis, Keem Olajuwon, David Robinson, Kareem, and James Harden did it twice. And none of those guys did it in the postseason. Yeah. So it's very rare.
All tall guys, and then a James Harden. Did not expect it.
And nobody in the postseason. And here we are, Jimmy, again scoring 40-plus in a playoff game. You know, we said it. Like, Draymond always has there's 82-game guys or 16-game guys. He really is. Jimmy Butler is a 16-game guy. That's 5 40-point games in his last 32 playoff games. 0 in the regular season in 322 games. Now, he plays more minutes, you know, of course, in a postseason game, and that makes sense, but it's really crazy. He has taken his game just to a completely different level and was putting the pressure, not only hitting shots with, 12 and 19 he finished, but at the line, trade. You think, the pump fakes and just, drawing contact and baiting some foul calls for sure.
Totally.
This is what he does.
That's exactly right. He's Dwayne Wade, basically, as a player. That's why Dwayne Wade calls him my brother out there, and that's why Dwayne Wade came to the Bulls and stole Jimmy Butler away. It was a long-term plan, and it completely worked out for the Miami Heat, but 18 free throws is impressive. Giannis never took 18 free throws against the Celtics. He probably should have gotten to 18 free throws, but I also do feel like Jimmy earns his free throws because he's a small guy who drives as often as a big guy does. Like, he's going to be in the lane as much as Giannis is, but when you're 6'5", it looks a little different than when you're 7 feet tall and the biggest, baddest dude out there. So Jimmy is savvy inside. He's strong enough to get to his spots, and the jumper is good enough that he can take it when he absolutely needs to. And then when he's able to score in transition plays, that's so huge for the Heat, because without Lowry there, they're not going to get the off-the-rebound, hit-ahead sort of plays. So to actually just turn defense to offense, that's easy money for Jimmy Butts.
Yeah, one of the X factors when we were talking about our predictions and doing the preview yesterday, I went with Tyler Hero, and I thought he played really good in this one, especially when they were down early and they looked like they couldn't score, and he checked in halfway through the first quarter, and he hit a three immediately. Then he hit, you know, got a couple switches on some bigs and was hitting like little floaters, got a kind bounce here or there. And then he had like the Kyle Lowry like pass to Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, yeah.
Gorgeous yeah. look ahead that was a really tight window. And so he was playmaking as well. Just gave him a jolt, I thought, Tass. And that's what they need. I think they need like three more really good hero games, of course, paired with Jimmy and Bam doing their thing and the other guys contributing because it's a team effort. But he has to have these little spark plug games, I think, and even moments to help Miami, who do struggle at times to score and against a great defense.
Oh, yeah. Miami was being squashed those first minutes without yep. Tyler Hero. And Jimmy wasn't looking great. The length, I think, was bothering him a little bit. And then Hero came in. And, yeah, if he's passing ahead like he did to Jimmy Butler that time, he's got to be feeling great. So I think he loves playing against these Boston Celtics guards. And, again, I think that's where they desperately missed Marcus Smart. They had to go a lot with Derek White and Peyton Pritchard, and they switched so much that everybody needs to be big out there. Tyler Hero's going to take advantage of it. Jimmy Butler took advantage of it. I thought Jimmy was a little reluctant to go against length a lot of the first half, and then he started getting those switches, and the jumper started feeling good, and then he was hitting against everybody, including Jason Tatum, and that was sexy to watch. A couple Tatum versus Butler possessions. Tatum got him in the first half, blocked him in the corner, then Butler blocked Tatum in the corner the second half, and Jimmy was feeling so good. The length wasn't bothering him after a while. But I think Marcus Smart has to find a way to get back on this floor. Mm-hmm. I underestimated how much they'd value they need him, because you know they got by without him against Giannis because you know he doesn't have to do a lot against him. They got by you know without him for a full game, but in this instance Jimmy Butler was just picking on Peyton Pritchard, so they gotta fix that real quick. Hopefully Marcus Smart can come back.
We talked about Boston winning the three quarters without two of their starters in Horford and Smart, of course Heat missing Lowry. Other good positives from the Celtics to at least take away from this? Like, what would you pick besides, let's say, Tatum looking great in the first half, things changing in the second half, but who would you circle that was like, okay, this is a good thing from Boston moving forward here?
Well, I think they can get a lot more out of Grant Williams. I mean, I was expecting to have a bigger impact. He only hit the 1-3, got in a bit of foul trouble as well. They're a bit frustrated, so they can play much better, and they need those other guys. I thought actually Tice gave them some decent minutes when he came in off the bench there, but really it's hard to sort of look, because Tatum and Brown both played okay games in terms of scoring the ball. I mean,
Brown didn't do anything until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, well, I mean,
he got 15-6 of whatever his final box score was in the fourth quarter, and you know, look,
3-for-12 outside of the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Well,
he's a streaky player.
He is.
Yeah.
But I would go with Tice. I would say you said it already too. Like, Time Lord was great.
Yeah,
he was until he was cramping up. I mean, he was 18-9 and like challenging so many shots in the first half at the rim. I thought he was super active for a guy that hadn't played.
His athleticism is just incredible.
Yeah.
Just the upgrade that on Al Horford, who's a very smart defender, but that athleticism, the ability to contest those shots is incredible here. But look, I mean, if it's one of those things where the Celtics like, good, game one, we can't be like that anymore. We have got to tidy up just how we take care of the ball. And hopefully they will get a couple of guys back here. Certainly when they get Al Horford back as well, that will just give them a little bit more off the bench. Because Pritchard was okay offensively for them. But yeah, they defensively, the Heat are just like, if he's out here, Jimmy Butler's just going to go and ruin him. And he did. So, you know, it was funny when Pritchard came down and hit a three. All the bench was ready to come in there for the Celtics, and then he hit that three. Joker was like, just hang on a second.
Luke.
Yeah, I mean, it stayed somewhat close, and you said, like, the Heat, they had their lead cut to, like, single digits there, and then it was like, you know, it was just like trading threes.
Yeah,
it was like Tatum and Tucker, and then you had Brown and Strus. Yeah. I mean, they were hitting some timely, like, sort of counters where it was still a game. But, I guess what I'm getting at here is anyone that took the Celtics here at this table, do they want to immediately like switch their prediction after just one game?
Never after one game.
Okay.
No.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought would be your answer.
Because again, the Heat, talking about three-point shooting, they only hit 10 threes themselves last night. I mean, that can be something that has affected them on the road. So Celtics obviously have to get game two, I think, here, and then go home and still feel pretty good about themselves. So, I mean, it was one just disgusting quarter from the Celtics. I mean, yeah, it was putrid quarter. Other than that, and the fourth quarter, you can sort of take that out as well, because the game was, they were down, 17, I think it was, going into that fourth.
Yeah.
You know, so they had a
but huge had it cut to like 10, yeah, like, with like 8 minutes to go, so it's yeah, like still there.
But Jimmy wasn't going to, he was like, all right, I'll just, as long as Pritchard's out here, I'm just going to keep going at him, so fine.
Any other thoughts from game one of these?
Yeah, the third quarter is really the entire story, and I think the Celtics can say, flush it, good night, let's play game two, because I think the worrisome part, you know, going back to watching a bunch of those possessions, was the fight level wasn't there. Mm-hmm. The Jaylen Brown allowed Jimmy Butler just to corral an offensive rebound so easily, box him out, and while those possessions were happening where the Heat were scoring over and over and over again, you just can't let little things like that happen. You got spanked by 12 minutes, and for a full 12 minutes, you know, there was a 7 minute stretch where they didn't score a basket, and they were also just stripped and, you know, lacked the fight on the other end, and they couldn't find a guard out there to be able to switch. They pulled Derek White, put in Peyton Pritchard, and so they learned stuff, I think, from that third quarter. I think they can just say, we feel good. I think they should feel good with Marcus Smart coming back. Otherwise, it's going to be a little bit of a scramble defensively to try and figure out Butler. But up and down the roster, yeah, some of the fight level wasn't there. The turnovers were horrendous. But, you know, you got good minutes out of a weird situation where Aaron Nesmith was playing. He didn't play all freaking playoffs. And he had three blocks in this game. What? He had five all year. Daniel Tice gave him some good minutes off the bench. Like, they were,
yeah,
I think they feel pretty good about their rotation other than that third quarter.
And yeah, especially if they get their players back and they don't have to play those guys. Because I think that will be the huge thing. Like, I mean, 10 minutes is too much for Aaron Nesmith in a playoff series. 30 minutes is too much for Peyton Pritchard. Mm-hmm. And Tice, he was a minus 16 in his minutes. He's the slowest guy on the court by far. So I think that that's going to be a problem the longer we go. But as they get Horford and Smart back, I mean, Smart is the key right now, because the Celtics don't have the release valve right now with Horford on the bench and Smart on the bench. That would be the guy to attack four on threes, because the Heat are going to do the same thing. They're going to say, Tatum, you had no clue how to handle what we were doing in the second half. Can you figure it out in game two? The Celtics need somebody to catch the ball, put it on the floor, and make a play. Pritchard did that a little bit. Derek White should probably be the guy when there's no Marcus Smart out there, but if either Horford or Smart comes back, they're so good at just connecting both sides of the floor that would be big time.
We don't know Smart's status for Thursday night game two, right? We just are.
He was pretty active on the bench there.
Yeah,
last
he was.
Night.
He was standing just, a lot. Yeah,
he didn't warm up good. Like, he didn't warm up for the game.
Yeah, yeah. They need him for sure. Mm-hmm. And Horford, I guess it's sounding like, yeah, he might miss this game because he's in health and safety protocols, which is crazy. I mean, that happened like hours before the game. We learned of that, which was really wild. What do you think of the Heat crowd getting that 8:30 start? Think it helps them out? And their seats a little earlier there. So that 7 or 7:30 starts that they sometimes were getting in some of these playoff games. What'd you think of the
They were
the
good. They
fine.
Were good.
Yeah. I think they are helped out by the later start. They're actually in the building, a little buzz building. Venus Williams in the crowd.
Yeah.
I wish Serena was there. We would have had four Williams in attendance. That's a lot.
That's a lot, yeah.
Right?
I should play mixed doubles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
At all sports.
Yes. Yeah.
So the Venus, so the Williams sisters versus the Celtics Williams.
Yes. Boys.
In Robert and Grant. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be great. I'd watch that.
Wow, I would too.
What'd you think of Grant Williams being mic'd up?
Not too bad.
Inside tracks.
Yeah, not too bad. Younger guy. fine.
Younger guy.
You know, he was pretty encouraging. You know?
Yeah. I talked about on the mini pod last night, the immediate reaction pod I put up. He's a little annoying, isn't he? Don't you get the vibes? Everyone's like, all right, shut up, man.
Well, I think the thing is, when you are mic'd up, I think you're just way more conscious. And so you want those.
100%.
You want to be the teammate, the good guy, you know, the role player who's like, all right, I'm here for my guys. I'm very encouraged.
I get it. But like, by all accounts, he never sort of stops talking.
No. It's like Arthur Hamilton at Wednesday night pickup. They lost the game last week against me and Trey, and there was a little bit of tension between one of his two. He said, hey, I'm not criticizing. I'm trying to lift you up. That's what it felt like watching Grant Williams there.
Okay. And what did you think about the flagrant one call we did get in this game? Interested to hear your take on Bam boxing out, Robert Williams sort of jumping then for the rebound, gets undercut. They go take a look at it, and they decide that's a flagrant one. What do you think?
Good call. Can't be undercutting players when they're up in the air. And I know you're saying it's a box out, but if Bam thought that was a box, if that was a shot, then I don't know that Bam Adebayo has seen a shot. It was a lob. Like, it was clear to a lob. They're saying he was trying to box out. He was just trying to get some contact on him. So I thought it was the right call.
Steve Javy was right on that. He called it as it was happening. Like, he said, this is going to be a flagrant one. Mm-hmm. And it was Mark Jackson. I can't remember which one
Van
of them.
Van Gundy said, this is going to be a flagrant one as well.
Yeah. One of them was like, that shouldn't be a flagrant one. And I get what he's saying. Like, you know, he was implying he wasn't watching. But still, if you're ducking down like that and a guy comes over, guy hit the ground, I think it's a flagrant one.
I thought overall the officials, I guess, weren't bad in this one until there was a moment where it felt like Zarba, Malloy, and Tony Brothers wanted to shine a little bit. Get a little camera time.
I saw you tweet that.
Yeah, they did.
What was that?
We got a couple offensive fouls called, like, back-to-back again. It was like, it was like within three possessions. Mm. There was a couple. We had that play with Bam. They had to go over, show off their new haircuts.
Right. I think it was one of those rare situations there where they did the offensive fouls each way, then they gave Grant Williams a call as a makeup call. It was a weird makeup call as third call, because that shouldn't have happened. Yeah, the refs were fine in this game. They were fine, even though I think the Celtics like playing against the Heat's front line. And we saw in the first half, they were going to the rim, instead of facing Brook. They're stretching out Bam, and they're getting to the rim and feeling pretty good about that. So I thought, Lee brought up the three-point stat, Mark, only 30 shots from the Heat and 34 from the Celtics. So it's a lot of penetration. And they were pretty close to a halftime record for points in the paint, the Celtics in that first half. So it was a fun game. And then the Heat decided, we're closing off that front door. You are not coming in that front door. And a wild, wild turn of events there in that third quarter.
Yeah, the pressure, like you talked about, was similar to what they were doing with Trae Young in the first round, if you remember. It's so far out. And, it's one thing to do it to Trae, who obviously has a handle. But, I think the one knock maybe on a superstar like Tatum and then Brown, not a superstar, but, an all-star, their handle is not the tightest at times. And those quick decisions that they have to make. Tatum's become a better playmaker. But I'm with you, Trae. That was where you were, like, really missing either Horford at the free throw line, who always sort of, like, is just like a little calming sort of presence with the ball. And then Smart too, just an option.
Sure.
Because they ramped it up way out there, and it just kept leading to turnover after turnover after turnover. Mm-hmm. So, great pressure defensively, but sloppy and bad decisions being made, and not helping out even, I thought, Tatum at times. Some of the other guys, like, somebody's got to come to the ball with a little purpose.
Well, that's right. But again, I think sometimes those passes, they were sort of just drop-off passes that are like a regular season pass.
Yep.
Jimmy was just like laying in the weeds ready for those.
Hero was even the one snuck behind, I think. They were just trying to, like you said, like a bit of a lazy pass to Tatum. If it was regular season, no one's really going for that.
You're not taking
a risk, but in the playoffs they were playing a lot harder. Any other final thoughts, any random notes, anything from this game?
One thing with the referees, Tony Brothers, there was a little box out between Tatum and PJ Tucker, and their arms got kind of tangled.
Yep.
And he came over and basically just said, hey, knock it off. But they sort of said, hey, come on, man. We're just getting into it. It's a playoffs. We're just jostling. So I thought that was I thought it was good refereeing that he didn't give him a double T, because sometimes you see that, stupid double T. But then the boys also just said, hey, come on, man. We're just banging here. Like, let us bang.
Trey, do you have anything else from this one?
Daniel Tice had a monster block.
Huge.
On Dwayne Dedmon, but I got to say, felt like a direct-to-VHS sequel of Bam blocking Jason Tatum. I mean, we got worse stars here. The game wasn't as big of a deal at the time, but nice to see them get the band back together for a sequel.
Of the 20 blocks, it felt like 8 were like highlight variety, like either like come from behind blocks or obviously...
I swear one of them, Bam jumped completely sideways. Like he was flying sideways through the air like Superman for one of these blocks in the second half. He was all over the place, man.
Aaron Nesmith stopped a 4-on-1.
Yeah.
It literally was a 4-on-1. Yeah, and the smallest dude on the floor, who's had 5 blocks all season, got up to the rim and denied it. He's a cool guy to play with, I think.
He was playing hard.
He was, a lot of fouls.
I do think he gave back every single point that he saved on his blocks, though. He fouled a 3-point shooter. He fouled Jimmy after a pump fake, and then he was not even close on his 3-point attempts. Like, pretty bad misses, but... they were in a tough spot.
They yeah,
to,
they had
they
to try
to go deep
yeah.
into the bench for sure.
And he played hard.
He played hard.
Yeah, maybe gave a little bit back at times for sure. All right, well let's take our first break. Very excited, as if you can't tell, about this series. I think it's going to be a long one. I can't wait for game two there on Thursday night. I hope Smart is back. And who knows with Lowry? I mean, they haven't lost when he's not playing in the postseason.
Yeah.
With the way Gabe is playing, I thought, final note, I said this on last night's show, so apologies for repeating myself. I did think in the first couple minutes of the game, I was like, oh, Gabe Vincent and Max Strus look a little overwhelmed by the
for sure.
you know, Eastern Conference Finals here. Maybe at this point it catches up to them, but I was proven wrong because they both got into the rhythm of the game and obviously contributed. Obviously, timely shots and 17 from Vincent alone with three threes. That's huge. So
yeah.
They were fine.
In the third quarter, yeah, I think the leadership of Tucker and Butler, the old dudes just trickled down and those guys were fine. Maybe if the Boston Celtics have home court advantage, it's a different story, but they're playing at home and they feel good. And Gabe Vincent was monstrous in that third quarter. We're all talking about those strips up top. But he had a couple on Robert Williams where the Celtics finally got it inside, made the right passes, and Gabe made two clean strips of Robert Williams. I think one was called a block, mistakenly. But Gabe was real good inside and then started to find the range on the three. Great replay of him at the three-point line looking at the opposite shot clock.
Yeah, that was cool.
And then turning around. I don't know why he didn't just look at the shot clock in front of him, but whatever.
A lot of bodies in the way. He's not the biggest guy.
I guess. And then he turned around and banged home a huge three. I didn't recognize him when I turned on the TV because he had the new hairdo.
Yeah, like up in the Morant sort style. Of John Morant style. Exactly.
It's like, who's this?
Yeah.
Is there a 17th Miami Heat player?
You couldn't really even be all that surprised if there was. You're like, this is a new guy they found? Okay, cool. Put him in. All right, well, let's take our first break. When we come back, winners and losers from last night's NBA draft lottery and the league is considering a rule change. So we'll get into that. Don't go anywhere.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Okay, back with the boys in the Classic Factory. If you're just joining us, hit that like button, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube, share the show, tell your friends. We're here all playoffs. Last night, before Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals, the Orlando Magic won the number one pick in the 2022 NBA Draft at the NBA Draft Lottery. OKC, Houston, Sacramento picking second, third, and fourth, respectively. Here's a look at the full order of first-round picks for anybody joining us on YouTube right now, but we did it. We called it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the third time? We were trying to figure it out, Tass, before you got in here. Is this the third time our show has successfully predicted a day or two in advance the winner of the actual NBA draft lottery? I think it is.
I would guess fourth, but I'd have to go back and check. I definitely know it's the second time that there was a malfunction on the first poll, and we still got it right.
Right.
That's
right.
Happened before in a shower once.
Yeah, yeah. We had you in the shower with the giant industrial fan. You called that one. That was the Cavs way back, like early 2011, maybe?
10 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, but I think we did the fan back in the studio again. I think we got it right as well.
Well, yeah, we did. You were in the wind machine. That was the Sixers. So that's, what are we looking at there? 16, something like that?
Yep.
And then this one. So it's at least three or four, okay? Pretty good results.
Mm-hmm.
But last night's draft lottery, who is the biggest winner besides us and your sons?
Well, I think it's the Oklahoma City Thunder because they went in with the fourth best odds and they moved up to number two in this draft, which is largely from my own research here. Now, again, we don't all follow the college and stuff, but it sounds like any one of the top three out of Banchero, Smith, and Holmgren could be the number one pick.
Holmgren.
Isn't that his name?
Chet.
Holmgren. Holmgren.
Anyway. So
he used to be an NFL coach.
So, to move into that top three, I think, is major. You're going to get one of the guys who could be the number one. And for the Oklahoma City Thunder, I mean, they've been tanking a lot these last couple of seasons. Last season, they picked number six, Josh Giddey, as their highest pick. So now they get that real potential franchise-altering player there at number two. That is major, I think. And, you know, so if you fall out of that top three, most drafts, I think the top two or three are considered, you know.
Yeah, those
that,
three guys.
Yeah.
Those, and the Thunder need a big guy. So yeah, they're going to have to pick.
So exactly who they choose, obviously, we'll find out. But it sounds to me like Banchero is probably the number one pick right now. But maybe that's changing. Ooh, I don't know.
I feel like it's different.
Depending
every,
on who
every
you talk to.
Every mock I've seen, it's different, it feels like. But, you know, do they go Jabari?
But it's also good in a draft like this to not necessarily pick number one, because then you can't, like, oh, man, we left this guy on the board. You know what I mean? It's like, well, it's like when they got Kevin Durant back in the day. It was like, well, great, we get Kevin Durant. You know, you sort of get that. You can't mess up the first pick.
The it's like when the Hornets got LaMelo Ball.
That all said, you could be the Kings and pick
absolutely, of course you could. Of course you could. I'm just trying to spin it in a real positive way here.
I got you. Okay, so OKC, you got moving up into the top three there.
Yes.
They've also got the number 12 pick, which is big time. And I don't know if you saw any of the clips from Andrew Schlecht. They were having a big Oklahoma City Thunder draft party because this is like their biggest night of the year. Huge pops, starting with Nick Collison being announced as their representative. All the Thunder fans are like, Nick's up there. And he brought the good luck. So, good stuff. For Schlecht and the Thunder Boys.
Who do you think is going to go number one overall with the Orlando Magic? I mean,
honestly, for me, I think Chet Holmgren is the perfect Venn diagram, because every time they get the number one pick, they draft a center.
Mm.
Whether it be Shaq, Chris Webber played small ball center, eventually went to the Warriors, and Dwight Howard.
Right.
And they also like freakishly skinny and very long guys, which Chet Holmgren once again. So I'm like, their Venn diagram is a perfect circle.
Mm.
But I don't know. They also have a lot of big guys right now. A Chet Holmgren, Mo Bamba front court. I think that'd be hilarious.
People don't think Mo Bamba is going to be long in Orlando.
No Bamba.
Here.
No,
probably
Bamba.
Not with all these big guys. Okay,
they got
so,
too many.
Who else was a winner to you? Or thoughts even on who's going number one to Orlando or number two to OKC?
Yeah, he's going to be a large man, that's for sure.
Yes.
Jabari Holmgren or Banchero. The image that always comes up is the three images of those guys. So those are the guys I definitely know. They could go one, two, three. OKC's got to be extremely pumped. Yeah, to get up to number two, they have Shea, they have Josh Giddey, they have two ball handlers, they have Lou Dort on the wing, and then all of a sudden you come into this draft with three bigs that could be number one. So I'm sure they want the number one pick. I'm sure Sam Presti wants to flex his muscles on that day and not just leave it up to chance to who he gets. But I don't know. I'm familiar with Chet most myself, having watched him as a Zag with Drew Timmy beside him. But, he looked good. I know Paolo Banchero from the F1 race.
Yes.
The grid walk.
Right?
Looks like a confident guy. I'd like to have him on my team.
He looks like Patrick Mahomes, according to Martin Brundle. Yeah. You totally mistook him for that. So, we had Thunder moving up. And then the other team that really moved up was the Kings, who got a little lucky here. They were like, I think they were, sixth or seventh were their odds, something like that. Seventh, I believe, and then move up to fourth seed.
Yeah, but they moved up.
You're laughing because it's
well,
not...
Well, it's funny that they moved up to number four and the top three picks are supposed to be big guys. And then the number four, draft prospect is a super athletic guard. So I'm thinking guards with the fellas for Sacramento. They might be having to draft another point guard after drafting Davion Mitchell last year, after drafting Tyrese Haliburton the year before, all with their highest paid player being their point guard. Oh, Kings. How are they going to mess this one up is the question.
Mm, yes, and could they be aggressive in trying to move up? Is there any way you could talk one of those three teams above them?
Say, hey, Houston, you want a big?
Houston's looking good. They're getting a big either way. I think the Rockets are actually a big winner here because they're kind of in the Cleveland Cavaliers spot from last year. There was three potential number one picks last year. The Cavs ended up number three. Great, we got Evan Mobley. That's what the Rockets are this year. They're getting somebody who's going to be 6'10", who's going to help their team, whether it be Holmgren, Banchero, or Smith.
Yeah.
They got mostly perimeter talent in Houston right now, so they're just adding somebody who's going to fit in real nice.
All right, this is a question for everybody out there, both of these. Let us know in the stream team your biggest winner last night at the draft lottery. Let's flip it on its head, though. Taz, biggest loser. Who was it?
Well, I think it's the Blazers. Going back, they tanked, essentially, to try and get two good picks because they traded CJ McCollum for the Pelicans pick. They had their own pick where they were trying to get really bad. And what ended up happening is they ended up with the number 7, and that's it. So, yeah, it's unfortunate for them. Now, the McCollum deal, not necessarily their fault, but the Pelicans worked their way out of the lottery. They finished 15th, which was just out of the range of the pick that they would get. They could only get it if it was between 5 and 14. So that number one pick that they got for CJ McCollum now converts to a Milwaukee Bucks 2025 first-round pick, which ain't going to be as good. Obviously, I assume Giannis is going to play there forever. So, yeah, the CJ McCollum trade ended up being Josh Hart in parts. And so now the Blazers dropped with their own pick from 6 to 7. So that's what they got. And if you look at their team, you know, trading CJ McCollum, trading Norman Powell, Robert Covington, it is now the number 7 pick going into this draft. Damian Lillard, Anthony Simons, and then Josh Hart, Eric Bledsoe, who are both non-guaranteed. Justice Winslow, they want Jeremy Grant. They want a free agent, but it's not a great class. So not looking good for next season unless they somehow swing something big here. But you know, I mentioned all those guys and Lillard turning 32 this summer. He showed up at the draft lottery. I'm sure he's excited, but I wonder how excited he's going to be for another season playing with mm-hmm. that.
How do you think they go about figuring out who's going to represent the team? Especially when it comes to, like, Lillard or Sabonis or, like, the players. Like, it's one thing if it's a front office guy. I'm sure you'd want to get a little camera time. Why not?
Sure.
But I was like, do they approach Lillard? Does he really want to do it? I'm always fascinated by that.
Lillard's a pretty big star to be sitting at the draft lottery, especially considering, like Tass is saying, they tanked the season away hoping for him to get a good draft pick, and they dropped down. So, I mean, obviously he's okay with it because there's no way Lillard shows up without them asking ahead of time. He's like, yeah sure, I'll do it. I'll bring some good luck. Obviously was not the case, but I think that's probably why you see retired legends are generally the way to go, unless you are a pretty poor team with a young star. Lillard was a surprise, though.
Yeah, I was a little shocked by that. I mean, yeah, it was like we had Rip Hamilton, he had the mask there.
Yeah,
and
bad luck mask.
The Pistons slipped, too. They're probably one of the other big losers from the draft lottery, right?
Yeah, well, that's who I had, because they could have been third and they dropped to fifth. So that is huge.
When you say could have been third. They could have been first.
Well,
they
had
the exact same odds as those other two teams.
Yeah. They could have been first.
Yeah. Not after they didn't get the egg.
Yeah,
not gonna
that's right.
But, yeah, so to drop now out of that top three and obviously the top four as well means you're still going to get a good player, very good talent, but you had hopes of certainly getting no worse than three, I think,
and
going
then,
into
like,
the night.
And a big to pair with Kane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And obviously the young talent there and Sadiq Bey and stuff like that. Yeah.
So, tough one for them.
Yeah, that's how the ping pong balls fall.
That's right.
What do you think of the overall presentation last night? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
It seemed to me they were running behind because when Malika was calling out who was there, she was just ripping
through
those names.
She was going pretty fast there, yeah.
So I think there might have been a Matt Austin or a JD in there like, we're running out of time. You're going to have to just fly through these.
Yeah.
And she was.
It was the second last person.
Mosley. I think
it was Mosley.
Yeah, it was Mosley.
Yeah.
And his name, or they'd moved on to the next one, and he was there.
Stone and Mosley got very little camera time.
Exactly,
there.
Exactly. Yeah. So
we had an interview with like Lillard.
Yeah.
We had an interview with the three top prospects.
That's right.
Which I thought was fine. Then the Admiral showed up. He slid in.
Wow.
I thought it was. I will say, Malika Andrews is better than anyone that's ever done this at this. In my opinion, she kills this. Like. Mm. Just the juggling of literally ping pong balls that she has to do at a draft lottery where they're going over here. And
wait,
then
she's the one that mixes them up?
No, she might. She should be. She can't do anything wrong. I thought she was great in that
role.
She
sung Hamilton pre-show as well.
What can't
killing
she do?
It.
No. But I thought the stage looked cooler than it ever looked, maybe, too. I was a fan of it. It really went like LED crazy with this year's in Chicago, right? That's where it was, wasn't it? Right?
It was,
or somewhere in Illinois, I guess.
yes, it was in the state of Illinois.
Yeah.
Yorkville, Illinois is where they had it. Weird choice.
Oh, yeah, so where is that?
I'm kidding. Yorkville is like the town next to Plano, Illinois.
Oh.
It was not there.
But was it actually in Chicago or was it like sort of out? I couldn't. That's probably
I was watching Tampa Bay Lightning versus Florida Panthers at this time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kendrick Perkins had a good line off the top. he said something, they need a big, like, I need Weight Watchers
or
something.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That was pretty good stuff. And Mike Schmitz, the draft expert there for ESPN, does a fantastic job. But it was tough that all three prospects were giants.
Oh, they're gigantic. And then they bring in David Robinson.
I know. David Robinson looked four times bigger than Chet there next to him, just in his suit. So that was a tough one there for Mike. He didn't get a year where you might have had a six-footer as the number one pick there. Instead, he's holding the mic up to all these guys who seemed like they were just 7 foot tall, all of them.
Do you want Chet to go to OKC so we can see photos of him and Poku? And
Chet and Poku and Josh. Wow.
Yeah, and your guy Josh. Chet, and Poku, and my guy SGA. I mean, what a team they're building.
Yeah.
A couple Canadians and Australians.
Ah, yeah.
A couple guys that sort of look like me if you just stretch them out. There's some similarities, I guess, at least.
Very international team, the Thunder. So, yeah.
That's where you want Chet?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on the draft lottery?
No.
McCormick Place in Chicago is where I was at. Right by the lake. Okay. Right by Soldier Field.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. I really needed to know that. Where is that? Let's hear from everybody in the stream team. Your winners and losers last night. It was, it was fairly chalk there for the first little bit.
Yeah.
There wasn't... it's always fun when you get, because you're following it, and then you don't see the team. Tatum doesn't read or show you the card of the team that's supposed to be there, and you're like, whoa, they're in the top four. Okay. But it went for a little while there until, a Sacramento... and then you knew they were in it. Let's talk about this, though. According to Shams Charania, the NBA is eyeing a rule change to the transition take foul that would award the offensive team with one free throw and retaining possession of the ball. Okay? Board of Governors are going to vote on this change, which sounds like it's going to go through. Current rules similar in the G League right now, and they'll decide on this in July. So the transition take foul, thinking about tweaking it, at least the penalty for doing it. Thoughts? Will this change anything? Very little? Love it? What do you think?
They're eyeing a rule change. I was hoping the NBA referee official Twitter account would have hit us with the eyes emoji. retweeting Shams's tweet. Oh yeah, we're looking at that. This needs to happen. It's gonna happen. So shout out to the league for getting it done pretty quickly. This became one of the bigger referee talking points, I feel like, this season. For the first maybe month, we were talking about how much more physicality was allowed, how much more contact there was at the rim. That kind of went away over the course of the season, but the take fouls stuck around. So I don't know if there were really more this season, but it felt like there were more this season. Maybe it's just the culture of complaining on the internet that you're hearing it all the time and on the broadcast as well. So this seems like a smart way to do it. One free throw, you get the ball back. As long as there is no way that these can be reviewed, I'm 100% in on this. Yeah. They should not put any review language attached to this rule, because we do not need take fouls still happening then to be reviewed to get rid of the same foul.
Right.
That's the only way to make it worse.
Because we have this, but we got clear path fouls.
Yes.
That's what we're always looking at the damn monitor for, because it's like, where was the player?
Yeah.
Was he back on defense when the foul occurred? Because these are two different things. I think maybe some people don't really understand that. The transition take foul sort of generally happening in, however you want to look at it.
Transition.
I'm trying to... It's different than the clear path foul in the sense that it's usually happening sort of, I guess, more in the backcourt, if that makes sense. It's like the turnover happens and then it's the quick foul.
Yeah.
And we don't need to go look at it because there's no clear path situation. But they're similar in a sense, but the penalty not as harsh. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is what they have to do is not make it a super punishable offense by two free throws. It's just to try to eradicate it from the game. One free throw and the team gets possession. I think that's the smart way to do it here. But it is incredibly annoying when you're watching and the guys just grab each other just to slow the game down. That's what we got to get rid of. So that's why, again, you don't have a huge, huge punishment, two free throws and possession. It's just one to say, just discourage it.
Some people think it may not do a whole lot because the punishment maybe is not that severe.
I think they're wrong.
You do?
Yeah, I think this disincentivizes fouling. I think for sure. I think you just end up trying to play defense instead because, one in the ball will happen. The fact is they tried in the G League and it worked, so that's a great sign. That's what the G League is for. It's just like baseball, using that pitch clock. Bring it to the big leagues. That's what you have to do. It worked, and I think that's exactly the experiment that they needed, the results that they needed to implement it, done and done. Mm-hmm. I don't think you have to get all cute about it. Definitely don't review it. Never, ever. I guess the worrisome part is, you said some people don't know what this actually is.
Yeah.
Usually a 2-on-1, 3-on-1 transition, or a guy is just flying by and it's going to be a bucket. So yeah. if there is a gray area, if people don't know what it is, if we have to, you know, define what it is, like sort of like the clear path rule is, mm-hmm. there's kind of a gray area there. If there's a gray area in this and they have to review it, then gosh, that's going to be difficult. That's going to be tough to watch. Because as Trey said, it feels like it was the number one event of the year, the number one point of complaints, I guess you'd call it. It was, for sure. And I don't think it was because people like complaining. I think it just happened. But is it clear as to what it is? And I think that's probably why people complain. So hopefully, that refs just make a call, because it is freaking pretty clear, and move on with it.
Mike Prada, now of The Athletic, he tweeted his thoughts last night. He says, this is better, right, than it was, like this, if they put this, implement this rule change, which they probably will. But Mike says it doesn't solve the root of the problem. Players commit take fouls out of frustration and to sort of save energy, you know, stop the play. The solution, according to Mike, is a soccer-style advantage rule that allows the play to continue and then assess a foul after the fact. If the foul is hard, then you would make it flagrant.
That's not a bad idea, yeah. Because then, you're trying to stop the 2 points immediately. But yeah, if you foul the guy and then he can just go right in and score, then that isn't a bad way of stopping you from, I guess, trying to just like disrupt the play like that. So interesting. Yeah, not bad.
Could be something there. But let's hear from everybody out there. The transition take foul that the Board of Governors in July will be sitting down and doing the old, do they do straight up like yay or nay? They propose it? Maybe some video clips? Maybe some tweets from people, and then say, "All right, all in favor of changing this rule to one, you know, a foul and a shot, and then retaining possession."
Mm-hmm.
Yay!
They hold up their little placards.
Yeah, maybe.
I hope so. The parade idea, I get it, and makes sense, but it also adds another factor, another thing for the refs to think about, another situation where they assess the foul. I want to keep it as simple as possible.
People do hate a late foul call. You see a lot of maybe that wouldn't have been a foul if he makes the shot, but it rolls off the rim. They call the foul.
Yeah.
Crowd hates that. Players hate that. Teams hate that. So I don't know if you're delaying it for, you know, 15 seconds. They probably would hate that even more, but it is not dissimilar to soccer or even like the NHL. They call the penalty, right? But if you have
possession, it's the advantage.
Kind of stuff, but
I mean, I like a big part
we don't
of
need to, it feels bad giving the referees that much responsibility.
Yeah, I agree.
But I almost, that's fair. But if the whole point is to like, what we're doing is taking away some of the coolest plays in basketball because defenders are wisely fouling you in transition, clear path, similar, you know, stop the fast break. Well, if you want to continue, keep that, then Mike Prada's suggestion is how you keep the fast break dunks and plays like that, and then the assessing of a foul. But I get it. Nothing's perfect. We're just why we're spitballing here, guys. Maybe we'll sit in on the Board of Governors meeting.
No thanks.
No.
Really? I hear enough about referees these days. I don't want to sit in a meeting.
Lee, would you go represent for us?
Sure.
Okay.
Why not?
Why not? That will be your answer to everything. Should we do this? Yeah, why not? All right. Let's go have lunch. Let's take our final break. When we come back, JD has tweet of the night, and then we'll look ahead to tonight's game one of the Western Conference Finals. Don't go anywhere.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Danielle has taken up painting. Oil painting, acrylic painting, other painting. I don't know what it is, but it's just incredible. If I can convince her to open up a Shopify store, I know she'll be hearing the Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, just do it, to the first real life store stage, see, you made a sale, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? How about that? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap, offering outdoor outfits, or paintings, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From the all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Here's some information. Just like entrepreneur David Scott Martin of Antique Candle did for No Dunks on Shopify. How about that? And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/nodunks.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, let's start wrapping up here. We'll look ahead to tonight's Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals, but first, Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Yes, I have Tweet of the Night, and I don't know about you guys, but I don't have my notifications on Twitter. Like, I just leave them off.
Yep.
I try to avoid going on Twitter in general. I follow a lot of people I disagree with on purpose, you know, because I want to... You know, get the other side. You know, be apprised of what the dummies are thinking. But, yeah, so anyway, I logged on this morning, and I noticed I had a lot of mentions. So I'm just going to take this opportunity to clear out my mentions.
Okay. Oh, okay.
All right. Okay. Yeah, you know, it's just... it's a bit of a chore, and
new segment on the show. Clear out my mentions.
Clear out the mentions. So on Monday, we teased... We were going deep. Friday, we did sort of like a cursory, like, you know, let's just look at what's coming up in the conference finals. And we're going deep. And there was a lot of underwater type of making reference to going like a deep dive. Right. Yeah. So John Horn, a longtime fan of the show, he tweeted this. The No Dunks guys tomorrow going deep. Delighting newcomers with incredible insight. OK, so how do I factor into this? Well, he tweeted... My ultimate goal here is to clear out for me, T. Jason Doyle, to cook for 10 minutes about the 1989 sci-fi classic, The Abyss. Deepest movie out there, probably. Absolutely. In terms of like 40 minutes of the principal photography was actually shot underwater. Great movie. You guys seen this movie?
I've seen this movie a long time ago.
Yeah. I don't know if it holds up, but I remember loving it.
And it is about going deep, quite deep. So it definitely holds up from that perspective. I think it is still deep.
The screen grab made it look like it was a Busta Rhymes, Janet Jackson.
It definitely looks like that.
I think that I don't know if the special effects hold up.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
I'm doubting it.
But it was cutting edge at the time.
Yeah,
James
sure
Cameron. Okay. Speaking of media consumption, our man Yeshua.
Yep.
D Kid, big Star Wars fan. We actually had him on the show. Tass interviewed him about his Star Wars themed wedding.
Oh, yeah.
To me, he added me saying, I haven't heard you talk about it, but you excited for the new Kenobi series dropping in a few weeks. Now, Skeets, in your Magic Spoon ad,
yeah,
I mean, shots fired, you said Star Wars miniseries, boring.
Yeah, they are.
I mean... I can't disagree with you, honestly. Like
I watch them all. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, me too. And I like being in the world and stuff, but underwhelming in general.
Yeah,
you know. But I am Yeshua. I am quite excited about the Kenobi. I watched the trailer and I was like, oh, Darth Vader's coming back, but no James Earl Jones. You know.
Ooh.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that.
I thought it was interesting. Like somebody that who's very high up, a Disney higher up, said something along the lines of, the problem with the Solo movie is that we recast an old role with a new actor,
right?
But isn't this not Alec Guinness playing Obi-Wan Kenobi in the new one? And many people have played Obi-Wan Kenobi. And they also aren't going to recast Darth Vader. So I feel like you're getting a bunch of out both sides of the mouth. How are you supposed to be excited about a recast character when they're telling you we shouldn't have recast a character?
I mean, technically, yes. I hear what you're saying. But those guys, Hayden Christensen and Kenobi, Ewan McGregor. And they did three movies. I mean...
Fair. That's true. I guess they're like the Craig McTavish. They're grandfathered in.
Yeah. This one. Mm. Yeah. I don't see the point of casting Hayden Christensen as Darth Vader if he's going to do the voice. Like, you know, and then you bring in James Earl Jones to do the voice. It's like a guy in a suit. It could be literally anybody.
Could be anyone.
Anyways.
So The Mandalorian played after Craig McTavish and had to wear a helmet.
That's right.
And Boba Fett, did you think that was more boring or less boring than The Mandalorian?
I mean, I enjoyed that there wasn't a Baby Yoda in it. And I enjoyed it when the Mandalorian shows up, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, Boba Fett is like the most overrated Star Wars character ever. I mean, he was on screen for like 5 seconds in Sick one helmet. Movie.
Yeah.
He did this. He nodded. Nodded at...
he got a whole series out of it.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Yep. Congrats to Eshra Kitt, by the way. The man who sent in that tweet, he recently nodded because he recently graduated. He was at his graduating ceremony, nodding, accepting his degree. So congrats to him.
Congrats.
Yeah, I had to tie that in. I want to congratulate John Horn, the first tweeter as well.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Oh.
Congrats. I'm just trying to think why. No idea.
Okay.
Congrats,
next
John.
Next tweet. Just clearing this out, guys. Ripacid sent this to No Dunks. Excited to check out my new band.
Yeah.
I can't even pronounce the name of the band. Soreption,
probably.
They look good.
We're showing, for those listening, a photo of a very intimidating looking band. And the, I guess, maybe lead, I don't know, singer or performer.
Yeah. Just an incredibly sexy guy, obviously.
A resemblance to JD.
I don't even think I look that mean, but anyways.
You could pull it off.
Yeah, we could reenact this.
If we wanted the lighting to show half your skull like this man, then we could pull it off.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw that lunar eclipse the other night on this man's skull.
finally... we were talking about here. I'll show you my T-shirt here. Whoops.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, this is our classic part of our classic series T-shirts. Uh-huh. This is the starters version.
Yep.
So we released these, and our man Lupe Nunez. They're starting to be delivered. The three set that we were offering, and people are posting pictures of them. And Lupe tweeted, I got the deal to get in on all three. That was our three T-shirt special for the price of two. But I have to wait till Father's Day to break them open. Seeing all these pics and the guys wearing them on YouTube, I don't know if I can make it.
Oh.
Mm. Fair enough. But he has to wait till Father's Day. And then his wife chimes in. I assume it's his wife. You have to find him first. I've got secret stash spots. Wow. So... I love this. I just think it's adorable. And, you know, the family that consumes No Dunks together stays together.
That's right.
That's right.
So
he's got to do a deep dive on that house.
Twitter's not all hate. Yeah, it's fun. Spots. It's fun looking in the corners of your house.
You just don't see often.
Yeah. There's that.
Yeah. Father's Day is... It's not until June 19th, so...
Deep in the queue.
That's
is it 19th? The 19th?
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. I just checked.
Wow.
I got a month.
Wow.
I don't think you can wait that long.
No.
Not with three of these T-shirts in the summer and in the prime T-shirt wearing months.
Yeah.
Season could be over by June 19th.
It'd be too cold for those T-shirts.
We got to come out with some tank tops or send this guy some scissors.
Yeah. Good point. He's got to find the scissors in his house first. All right. So you've
cleared out your mentions. I'm going to clear it out for now. Yeah.
You feel lighter?
The mentions.
I feel good. I feel good. I feel like now I don't have to actually type anything and respond to people.
Nice. That's a good point. It's a good way to do it. Okay, let's look ahead to tonight's Game 1, Western Conference Finals. This one starts at 9, a little bit later. Mavs Warriors. This series is on TNT, so we have that. We'll be flipping back and forth between ESPN in the Eastern Conference and TNT in the West. Lee, you got a prediction for Game 1? You got something to watch for? What are you going?
Well, I'm just excited for this series. I hope it lives up to the hype. Luka hit an incredible shot that was going around socials yesterday. I think it was over Boban.
It was,
yeah.
Yep.
So Luka's in the mood. He's in the groove. He's in the bay.
Nice.
I hope the Mavs win tonight just to really cause the chaos. I think that's what we need is a big Game 1 Luka performance. Mavericks take it, and then it's like, ooh, maybe they can do it.
Okay. Mm. Would you like, so something, also you said the bay, you're always saying in his bag.
Yes.
Could be something there. Mm. Bay the bag?
Bay bag, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You would like Dallas to obviously prove this is not a fluke by any means, beat the Suns, and we're for real, and Luka's still on his heater. And make this a series right from the jump. Okay.
Yeah.
What are you watching for tonight, or what are you thinking?
Well, let's get to the X's and O's. Sure. I think the Warriors feel good defensively when Kevon Looney and Draymond Green start together. But you're playing against four guys who can shoot. So one of those guys, Draymond Green, most likely is going to have to be, you know, tracking somebody out there. So that's Bullock or Dorian Finney-Smith. So can the Mavs take advantage of that right from the get-go? Mm-hmm. That's my question. You want to get out to a good start here against the Warriors. But, yeah, the Warriors like that defense. So they feel good, especially because Otto Porter completely healthy. So they've got all of their weapons, other than Gary Payton II, unfortunately, ready to go. Iguodala, you know, kind of... you know, on the mend as well, but he hasn't been playing a lot. So they should feel good with Porter ready to go.
Trey, who wins Game 1 tonight?
Who wins?
Yeah.
Ooh,
you're on fire,
wins?
Man.
The Warriors are going to win.
Okay.
I do believe Warriors are going to win in Game 1. You want to get off to a great start if you're the Mavericks, but they also just won a series when they were down 2-0, yep. And the home court advantage was looking pretty enticing. So what I'll be watching is to see which defensive strategy pays off, because it seems most likely that Dallas will do everything they can to get the ball out of Curry's hands, make somebody else beat them. That's the complete opposite of what the Warriors like to do. They'll take away everybody else and say, Luka, you try to beat us. So which one of those is going to be the smart move? I guess we shall see tonight, because it should be a banger, a popper, on and popping. What else did we say? What other cool 90s slang words? It's going to be a fresh, dope game.
Sweet. There it is.
Well, there's going to be tubular. Tight tubular one tonight.
There are, in addition to this Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals, three other things to watch for tonight, like on your media devices.
Right.
All right, let me break them down. First thing is the immediate reaction podcast, the mini pod,
right,
that we're going to continue through the conference final. So join me immediately following this game. It's going to be a little later tonight, but we'll do that again. We had a lot of fun last night. So that's one. Two, we got some guys here I know playing pickup hoops.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we're going to see some mixtapes drop in, right?
Well, we hope so. But of course, Trey and I were so good last week and so dominant, we didn't get enough footage of
each
other.
And you were on the same team.
Yeah,
you guys gotta be on separate teams so you can record each other.
Yeah, but then
you want to win.
In a row, I mean,
I know.
JD, you're standing up to produce the mini pod. Why don't you go hit the basketball?
Oh yeah,
film some
well,
stuff.
Well, here's why. Here's why he can't.
That.
Here's why he can't. Third thing, the penultimate episode of Survivor.
Yeah,
tonight.
And get out your pens.
JD, this is really nice. 8 o'clock Survivor episode, right into the 9 o'clock Game 1 Western Conference Finals, right
Perfect.
Into the immediate reaction podcast, and then at some point, the trickling in of highlights from TK and Lee Ellis, hopefully at their run on social media channel. That's a lot of content.
I think
Matt Austin
tonight,
will consume all that content tonight.
I think so.
Yeah.
Anything from Art Hamilton today?
Hey, there's Art Hamilton.
This guy wants to show Art Hamilton. There he is.
There he is, our former Turner colleague, and he
He'll
plays in our pickup run.
He's got the Dwayne Wade earring, somewhat.
Will he be playing tonight? Have we confirmed that?
I think Trey said he is.
Okay, good.
Yeah, he's usually there.
Group me real quick.
No.
See what we got.
I know you got an Eisner for an hour.
Eisner's only coming for an hour. Seth will be there. Art's Sweet. Coming, bringing Siraj.
I saw that.
Yeah, Daniel. Well, you call him Eisner. Ian will be there as well. Mark is going to be there. He says, I'm not squeezing Lee's ribs tonight. Still sorry about it.
Yeah. Oh, what? What? Just quickly.
Lee was flopping. Lee was flopping big time last week.
No, well, I got like kicked or elbowed in the ribs 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then last week I was getting manned by Mark.
Yeah.
And he was like holding on to the exact
part. What do you need holding on to?
Literally, like it was a pregame and he was just joking around, like, not letting you get anywhere. And Lee, like, crumbled to the ground. And I was like, what happened?
Yeah. They're still sore, but they're okay. But,
I thought you meant he was playing defense and he was just grabbing your rib. I was like, wow, I've never seen that at our pickup runs.
Just a rib grab.
Yeah, I heard a great quote from Art Hamilton the last time I was at pickup. They're asking him to be on the other team, so he had to switch jerseys. He said, I'm a chameleon. I can be anybody, anything I want. I wonder if he can sing Hamilton. Can he do it all? There's one person I would like to hear sing Hamilton. I think he can pull that off.
Well, can you guys please record Art Hamilton singing Hamilton?
Yeah, Hamilton.
All right. We'll compare it to how Malika did. Let's call it there. Email in your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, @nodunksing. Especially if you want to see the basketball highlights that'll be trickling in tonight. Grab yourself an Athletic subscription. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks. I don't know why I forgot that for a second. I only say it every single day. And get your No Dunks merch, like that t-shirt our guy JD is wearing, over at nodunks.com. All right. Yeah, that thing pops on screen, JD. It looks great. Okay. We will see you guys later tonight for the Immediate Reaction podcast following game one. And if not then, we'll see you tomorrow morning here from the Classic Factory live at 10 a.m. Eastern. Till then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and remember, the other thing on your media devices tonight, the old Battle of Alberta. What's better than this?
Oh, God, baby. I'm sorry.
Oh,
yeah.
Baby.
Edmonton, Calgary, round two.
Who's got home ice?
Flames, baby.
Wow.
They're the number one seed. Big favorite.
Okay. Go Flames, go. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Embrace the day, people.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.